welcome to the very first episode of This Is Why Golf Opinion Matters. This is the podcast where we speak to the biggest names in golf to discuss anything from where the sport is at to the benefits it brings, bringing you the latest insight and analysis on golf's hot topics. For those of you who haven't heard about This Is Why Golf before, it's the place to go for all the data and information on why golf has such wide-ranging benefits for all of us. Whether you're an individual, company, or federation, this platform is for everyone. If you want to check out everything we have to offer, just head to our thisiswhygolf.com website, which has been created to explain and explore why golf is so beneficial and quite simply one of the greatest sports on the planet. In this first episode, we're going to take a broad look at what the landscape of golf looks like heading into 2023. From what's going well to what the areas for improvement are and which priorities the game should be focusing on right now. Now, our first guest is one of the biggest names in world golf. Padraig Harrington is a three-time major winner and has been playing at the top of the game for the best part of 30 years. He was also a member of six consecutive Ryder Cup teams between 1999 and 2010 before being named European captain for the 2021 edition. We've managed to find some time in his busy schedule for a chat. Padraig, lovely to have you with us. Where are you in the world right now?
I am in Barbados. I'm sitting about... I've had to go back into my room, so not for the noise quality of the waves crashing on the beach outside. So you don't feel too sorry for me.
I was going to say, it sounds awful. I'm feeling really sorry for you. How are you coping being in Barbados with the sun shining? I mean, it's almost like Armageddon here in London.
Yeah, you know, this, believe it or not, this is my first holiday of the year. So I've had a very busy year. So I'm here for 10 days and 3 days I've gone now without hitting a shot. And that's easily the longest I've gone all year. So yeah, you got to, I need to get away from it to get away from it. So I'm not the sort of person that if I was at home, I'd start tinkering pretty quickly. I actually need to go to an environment. As my wife says, sometimes she's got to take me and put me on a boat.
Just on your own, just on a boat on your own. Listen, you said 3 days without hitting a golf shot. How does that feel right now? Are you sort of itching to hit one?
No, I think I you know, in a situation like that, I can fall into just a nice, lazy lifestyle for, you know, the more days I go without hitting it, the less I want to hit shots. As well as that, I've got a probably, I had a good season, so I've done some work since the end of the season. So I'm not searching for anything is really it. What I want to do, I have in my head. So I kind of made any of the changes I want to make. I've made them already. Not they wouldn't be ingrained or anything, but I'm not anxious to get going or anything like that. I feel very comfortable about where I am in golf at the moment.
You've just said you've had a good season. Many would say you've had a fabulous season. Tell us about the victory a couple of weeks ago, record-breaking win at the Charles Schwab Cup Championship. 62 on the Saturday, that's not bad. Bought some fans some beers.
Yeah, you know, I think for me, you know, I'm on the Champions Tour and obviously I'm the young guy out there and I was playing well before I came out. So I expected to do well in the Champions Tour. I really, you know, that's the position I should be. But it's been nice. I've had 4 wins during the year, which is, you know, 4 wins is a lot anywhere. So that's been good. I've been challenging nearly every week. I've been challenging to win a tournament. But what I liked about it was just continually being in contention. It's amazing how it sharpens up your game. Being in a smaller pool, you know, always feeling on a Sunday that you have a chance to win. I think you tend to focus a lot more. When you have a chance to win, you tend to focus a lot more on your mental game. Yeah. When you're 6-7 shots off the lead, albeit you could, you know, finish 20th in an event, you then think, oh, that's a big 6-7 shots is a big gap. I've got to go work on my swing. I've got to hit the ball better. All those sort of things get in the way of you being sharp mentally. So, yeah, the Champions Tour has been a real nice eye opener. And as much as I love playing well in the Champions Tour, and I'm delighted, I'm hoping to go out and play well again in the Champions Tour next year, all that. What I'm really interested about is, does this carry over to when I go back and play with the young guys? Mm. Am I going to be a better, because physically I'm good enough to play with the young guys, but mentally, you know, I've been off my game for a number of years. So this rejuvenation, this sort of insight, I'm really curious how good I'm going to be with the young kids. And it's, you know, I've just got so much better. on a lot of mental areas because of it. I've been very comfortable in this, that it's mental errors that make the difference between you winning and losing when you're in contention. So I've been focused on those mental errors. And what I like about the year is the four wins I had all came from me leading on a Sunday. I got very comfortable leading on a Sunday. The last three wins in particular, I won going away from the field.
The last one was pretty easy for you, wasn't it? Seven-shot victory.
The other ones were like four shots, and I think the other one might have been two, but there was no drama in them. So I've always been a player. A friend of mine has said it about, I know he's saying it about me or referring to me, but saying about some people, he says some people have to win a tournament twice. And I've been that guy. I could have a lead, and I'd always create some drama to let somebody back into the tournament, and then I'd go and win the tournament again. You know, it wouldn't be so simple. Whereas these three tournaments, the last three, not the US Open, I won the US Open in the summer, and I did exactly that. I had it won by miles. I think I was six ahead after 63 holes and was caught after 68 holes or something. So, you know, I am that guy that creates drama in tournaments, but the last three events, no drama. Just kept doing my thing, kept going ahead. And that's a different golfing personality.
Yeah,
for me.
That's a switch. That's a change.
What
do you put that down to then?
Just because I'm there every Sunday. Yeah. I'm learning. I'm a big fish in a small pond.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be said for that. I'm gaining that sort of... Yeah. There's no substitute for the practice that you get by being in contention. You know, it doesn't matter what you do. And I would argue that hitting shots on a driving range is actually fairly close to useless when it comes to playing golf.
Be surprised to hear that.
Well, every shot you hit in the golf course is a reaction to what's in front of you. Don't care what you say, every shot is a reaction. So if you're hitting an 8-iron into a green and there's a bunker on the right side of the pin that you don't want to be in, you're reacting to that. And if the bunker was on the left-hand side, you'd be reacting to that. So if you turn around and say, I can't believe I pulled my 8-iron. Well, the reality should be, I can't believe I pulled my 8-iron when I wasn't trying to hit it right. Or I can't believe I pulled, you know, it's the second part is so important. So most of your good practice should be on the course. So I grew up with no practice range. So I spent all my time, I'd go out late in the evening, I'd go out when the course was quiet, I'd find difficult shots and I'd hit it until I could hit it. So if I had a chip shot that somebody said, well, it's impossible to stop that short of the hole, well, I'd stand there and hit 2, 3, 4, 5 shots until I managed to do it. I might even hit 20 if nobody was looking. But most people don't have that ability to do that on the golf course. But you should go out and play with 2 or 3 balls and figure it out.
Totally. But listen, heading into the festive period, what are your plans over Christmas? I know you're in Barbados. You were lying on a beach. Now you're in your hotel room. But please enjoy yourself because you do work really hard. But what's your plan over Christmas and the start of the year?
Well, I've got one more event. I've got the father and son coming up.
Oh, yes, of course you do. The PNC Championship.
Yeah, of course, it's not the father and son anymore because it's parent and child, whichever way you want to make it up. I think it's even nephew if you want at some stage. Depends
someone
how big
that you're related to.
Yes.
And you're playing with your son, Patrick, aren't you?
Yeah, and that's really a great event. Some of these guys are my heroes that are there. I get to watch them play. I get to play with them. Get to sit down and chat with them. And it's quite relaxed. So we all do hang out together. So you get to spend some quality time with people that, you know, I grew up not just watching on TV, even people before that era. So, I can't tell you how friendly Gary Player is with my son, Paddy, you know,
Is
great because, my kids wouldn't necessarily know that sort of level, the Gary Players, the Lee Trevinos, but those people are so nice to, we all tend to be very nice to each other's kids in the sense of, I think we should put a rule in that every father or parent is given another parent's child to coach for the week because you can't coach your own kids.
I can relate to that 100%.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we should all, it should be like a Chris Kindler, right? You've got to manage this kid for the week and help him.
Oh, I think you speak to the committee about that. Definitely.
Yes.
Totally. It's the fact that it's cross-generational, one of its biggest selling points.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I think anybody who goes to watch it, anybody gets to watch it on TV, there's somebody there that appeals to them. If they're into golf, there's somebody there that they watch growing up that did something that is a hero of those. So, like, and as I said, for me, I walk down the range, the two I really stopped to watch are Lee Trevino and Gary Player. Gary Player, pound for pound, is just phenomenal at his age. He's 86 years of age. I saw him in the gym this year. I saw him in the gym this year, and I had to stop. I had to actually go and stop, take, have a look at him, talk to him, take a video of it, take a picture of it, post a picture. It's phenomenal what he's running on the treadmill. He's bench pressing. It's just incredible. I'm going to let you in with a secret
about
Gary Player, and he won't be happy with me. But at the Father and Son, they have in the Players Lounge, they have a kind of a sweet trolley tray place, you know, with desserts and sweets and things like that. And one of my crew sat in the Players Lounge one day. They weren't able to go out to the golf course, and they said nobody visited that sweet tray more than Gary Player in the day.
Really? But he says he doesn't eat dessert.
No, he doesn't if anybody's watching.
Do you know, I can tell you a little sneaky secret as well. I did an event, which was a brilliant event, up with the RNA at St Andrews, and I was sat next to him at dinner, and I can tell you he enjoys sugar after his main course.
Gary Player is like the rest of us. We're all very disciplined when we're in control, but temptation is just a difficult thing.
But then the thing is, he'll be on the beach the next day working it off, where the majority of us won't.
Oh, he'll have done it twice that day. He'll have worked it off. So Gary knows, as much as he will tell you, everything has to be some moderation. And if you wouldn't be worth you living your life.
Totally. There has to be a balance, doesn't there? Yeah. Of enjoyment and the discipline. He's got so much discipline, but occasionally letting yourself go is really healthy. In terms of health and well-being, there are so many stats flying around. I'm sure you've got some for me. What are the biggest health benefits that you've noticed personally from playing golf over the decades?
I know the stats will tell you that golfers live 5 years longer. I know that they say it's 5 to 8 years of active life they get more out of playing golf. So, you know, those are the surveys and the stats. I know the mental health of golfers is well above, you know, the normal population. Actually, if you play golf, you'd actually think that's not true. But in real life,
drive
it is.
You insane sometimes.
Let's face it, anecdotally.
Yeah.
There's two things anecdotally I see.
Okay.
You go to any golf club, and there'll be so many old codgers in their 90s there, running about the place, playing golf, active in the golf club, in their 90s. And the second thing you see with golf anecdotally, golf has a terrible stigma about you need to be rich to play golf, which, you know, was never the case. It's not the case in Ireland, certainly not the case in Scotland. I'm sure many places in England it's not the case. So what you actually need to be rich in time to play golf. That's the real thing. So what you tend to see with golf is you see a lot of people on shift work playing golf. So policemen, taxi drivers, priests. But it actually saves the life of a lot of people. Barmen, rock stars. I know.
I'm imagining them all in their uniform on the golf course now. I don't know why.
you
all those from different walks of life brings them together.
But people who are on shift have a lot of time.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is, like, if you went to the rock star analogy, the amount of rock stars or sports stars or celebrity stars that it's actually saved their lives, golf, because golf is obsessive and takes up time. And it means that they're not bored during the day. They're not, you know, it's reformed alcoholics. The amount of people who are alcoholics or drugs from you know, that sort of career in as a, say, a rock star type thing, the amount of people who have found their passion in golf to absorb that time and to absorb their mental energy. So it's a phenomenal game once you get into it for just obsessing about in a nice way.
Yeah. I mean, it is a little bit hard for those who don't play golf to understand what it's like when you step out onto the golf course with your mates, that a sense of freedom, escapism, connection, community, coming together. It's really special and creates those endorphins and those emotions that just elevate your mood, don't they?
You're 100% right. There's something for everybody in golf. So if you're just into hanging out with your mates, it's brilliant.
Exactly.
If you're into being competitive, it's brilliant. If you're into, like, I used to have this terrible issue with golf because I'm all about getting the job done, get the score done. And then I'd be giving lessons to people. And I'd say, well, let's work on your short game. And they wouldn't do it. They'd work on their long game and get no benefit from working on the long game.
They just weren't listening to you.
Well, it took me a few years to realize some people play the game to score well.
Yeah.
But other people play the game to hit the golf ball well. They're not interested in the score. They want to make a good swing. They want to get the pure strike and feel good about that end of the game. And the score is only secondary. There's so many different characters in golf. And there's always a place in golf for everybody in that sense. I know plenty of people that the golf is 4 hours only getting in the way for them to go inside and socialize afterwards. But the greatest thing about golf is at one moment, any one moment in time, you can hit a golf shot that's better than anybody else, any pro, anybody else in the world for that moment. So you could hold a long putt and just for that moment, it didn't matter if you got Porter Harrington or Tiger Woods there, we wouldn't hold that same putt in that moment.
Can you call yourself a golfer, though, if you don't go out and play traditional, you know, an 18-hole round?
No,
if you just go to the range, you're still a golfer, aren't you? Go and hit a bucket of balls.
People who play golf have this assumption that you've got to have 18 holes. That's come in later, too. It's a recent thing. I grew up, I would go to a golf club to play 3 holes.
Yeah.
I'd go up at 8 o'clock in the evening, knowing it's dark at 9 o'clock. And go out and try and play 6 holes in an hour or
chasing the
do
light.
A couple of loops.
Yes.
Yeah, always. So the game became quite competitive in golf clubs and scores and handicaps were very important and that needed 18 holes. I know the RNA have now brought it back so it's only a 9 holes for handicaps. Mm. But you can play 6 holes. Me personally, when I play with my friends, I like to play about 12, 14 holes because that gives me time to turn up and I can go into the clubhouse, maybe have a cup of tea and some breakfast, whatever, go play, and then I have time to come inside and then socialise with my friends that I've played with. I don't feel stressed. Nine holes is a bit short for me.
Okay.
But I'm not saying it's short for everybody. 18 holes is a long time.
Yeah.
It's quite serious, 18 holes. So I'm quite happy with play a few less holes and then have more social time. I've built a putting green in a local park, Marley Park in Rathfarnham in Dublin. So we've built a putting green that's... it's styled on the Himalayas at St. Andrews.
Amazing. Isn't that through your charitable foundation?
Through my charitable foundation and the RNA and Golf Ireland and Marley Park and the Lurie County Council. We all got together. We built this green. It's not crazy golf windmills, but it's crazy golf. If you were talking golf on a golf course, it's a bit much more extravagant than that, I suppose, mounds and humps and slopes and things like that.
Oh, so it sounds fantastic.
I think it's a third of an acre. It looks like a full acre now when you see it. It's a big green.
And what impact will that have?
Well, it's free for use in one of the busiest parks in Dublin. So people walking around, you do not need, and there's a par tree course in this park, but we built it away from the par tree course because we want people to not feel in any way intimidated by golf. They don't need to have a collared shirt. They don't need to have any shoes. They want to play in no shoes. They want to play whatever they're walking around the park in, they can go in and play golf. That's the way we want it. If they want, you know, just go in and have a putt. The putters, the balls will be provided. Play for 10 minutes, play for an hour. Bring your kids, old and young. Whatever way you want to do it, you can do this. There's no formality to it. And just let people get a taste for it. And what we found is, I built a putting green in a hospice where my dad was passing away from cancer. He actually instigated it. And we built a putting green there, 10-yard square putting green. And the patients to this day still love hitting putts on this green because it's everybody can putt.
Oh, that's
it's
gorgeous.
Pretty easy task. And yet it gives satisfaction.
Well, I think this is a brilliant initiative. What other initiatives would you like to see more of to grow the game and develop junior players?
Yeah, well, we're pretty good in Ireland, I've got to say. You know, I think every golf club is taking in juniors, wants to take in juniors.
Mm.
So, you know, if a kid is interested in golf, if he knocks on the door and a couple of times, I guarantee you the club will go, well, you know, let's come and see what you're like, let's play. And if he gets that interest, there's no doubt it will build up over time. And once you get any good, you're involved in all the programs. So at my local club, my two kids, I think, I think it was 120 euros, maybe it's 150 euros for the year, but they have free lessons on Sunday. All the golf is free outside of that. My
That's
own
brilliant.
Son, my son is 15 years of age. He's very casual at his golf. I will say his mother did this about a year ago.
Always blame the mother.
But up to that, he played in his trainers.
And
the reason he played in his trainers is it wasn't his love or passion. So he only plays, he plays with his mates, might play once a week during the summer. That's it, not even. But he played in a tracksuit bottoms and a messy football jersey. You know,
easy.
Because onto your child is interesting. He doesn't need anything. He doesn't wear a glove. You know, he doesn't need anything until they start wanting it and looking at it and being interested in it. So people think it's an expensive game. It's not. Until it becomes your passion, you can make it expensive.
Yeah.
But in general, there's very very few places you can go. The club I'm at is one of the busiest in Dublin. The football clubs you're going to spend more in the boots. You're going to pay more in your subscription.
That's a great price.
That comes with it. Whereas I grew up, I played for Ireland. And I only owned half a set of golf clubs, and they were imitation clubs in the first place. The whole set cost 110 punts back then. My brother owned half, I owned half, and I borrowed his half to play for Ireland at 15 years of age.
That is fascinating, really.
I never bought a golf ball in my life. I found them. I used to go out and look for them and sell them.
That's using your initiative. I used to do that. I used to go and retrieve balls from ponds and, you know, streams and whatever.
Where did you grow up playing golf then? What sort of club?
Oh, in the Northwest. Stockport Golf Club was my club. But I played a lot in North Wales as well. But I started with one club. It was a wooden 7-iron. And I just played greensomes, 12 holes actually. Your favorite, 12 or 14. But played 12 holes with my mum in a greensome every weekend. And I played on a Wednesday night as well. And it was just with one club and a putter. It wasn't expensive until I became passionate about it. I've cost my parents a lot of money, but, you know.
But the other thing with golf is it's quite aspirational. You start off, you play in the local public course, you turn up, you go to the driving range, then you join a club. And look, and if you get interested, you want to join the better club in the area, you want to join the fancier club, you know. And
but it has
you
to come from that passion, doesn't it?
Yes. And again, if you're out there, parent or grandparent, and you're trying to get a child into the game, the first rule you do with your child is bring them somewhere that you're not stressed, because they can tell if you're stressed, and they will see that stress and not like the environment.
Did you know that 80% of communication is body language, not what we say?
I didn't know the figure on it, but the kids are really good at it.
Yeah.
So bring them somewhere where you're relaxed. Let them enjoy themselves. And if they're young kids and they want to roll around in the bunker, let them roll around the bunker. You've got to make the experience enjoyable, because if it's enjoyable, they want to come back.
Mm.
I would suggest bring them home before they're tired, so they want to come back. And the other thing I would suggest to any parent, grandparent, is if you can, when it's finished, take them to the clubhouse veranda, the clubhouse bar, sit there and have a Coca-Cola or whatever it is with them for 10 minutes, because that child will remember that experience. They're sitting at the bar, they're a big boy or girl, they're sitting on the veranda, they're having an ice cream. The experience of that and spending that moment there will be to think, I love golf. And they'll play golf for 100 years based on the fact every time they ever go back to a golf course, they'll remember that 10-minute moment they had with their parent, the quiet time, we're enjoying ourselves, we're not, you know, this is our time. That's the sort of thing. So again, if you want your kid to be good at golf, find a way that they enjoy the game and they'll figure out how to be good.
Oh, they're just really great pointers there. You've given me goosebumps, actually, taking me back to my childhood, because that's what we used to do, play a few holes and then go into the clubhouse, be part of that community and that family environment. And that's what we do with our two children. They go and have a lesson, mess around on the putting green with their mates on a Sunday, come into the clubhouse, have a bacon sandwich or whatever. And they're treasured moments. They really are. And hopefully that enjoyment, as you say, will bleed into playing golf for many years and enjoying it, because they want to, and they want to be part of that scenario and being around people that, you know, people that make them feel good, and an environment that makes them feel good, and an environment that makes you feel good, I know.
I used to go inside for a drink that the barman nicknamed a dog wash. It was 40p, lemon and lime cordial, obviously with with water, a pint of dog wash. And obviously,
it's a marvellous name.
We didn't have money. 40p was a big amount, but that's what we would get. A lemon and lime cordial. Pint of it with ice.
Oh,
and the barman called it a dog wash.
So if I go into any establishment and ask for a dog wash, I'm going to let you know what response I get.
Yeah, I'd say the name is long gone. It was the barman who christened it. But
oh, I see. What was his name?
Yeah, John Nealon. Yeah, he's passed away since. But I think if you went to my era, the kids of my golf club, certainly we remember the fond days of the dog wash.
You're listening to This Is Why Golf, Opinion Matters. We'll be back with Padraig Harrington in just a moment as we continue to look ahead to what 2023 has in store for the world of golf. But just before we do, there's another podcast you might be interested in, which we wanted to tell you about, The Women's Golf Show.
Join me, Jenny Falconer, for the new podcast, Taking the Golfing World by Storm. Now, every fortnight, I'm joined by co-hosts Beth Allen and Ali Whittaker and an incredible guest as we gain insight into women's golf, discuss hot topics in the professional and amateur game, and learn about the untold stories of so many inspirational women across the golf world. You can subscribe now for free and get listening to The Women's Golf Show today.
Thanks, Jenny. Now back to our chat with Padraig. I know an area of the game that you're really passionate about is event development. You've got an enthusiasm for golf course design. How did that come about and why are you so passionate about it?
You know, like all golfers, we're out there all the time and we see good and bad things. I'm often fascinated that when it comes to design of golf courses, they often design a golf course that's difficult for amateurs and yet easy for pros. And you go, well, but that defeats the purpose. The perfect golf course is very easy for amateurs and they don't know it, and then difficult for pros. Pros, but if you're going one way or the other, make sure your golf course is very enjoyable for your amateurs, because pros very rarely ever play it. You know, if it's a championship course, we play it once a year. So why would you set your golf course up with pros in mind when they're not your members? They're not the people who are using it most of the time. Yeah. And the thing is with pros as well, our referees come and set the golf course up. So if they've got an incredibly difficult golf course, they'll just set it up easy. And if they've got an easy golf course, they'll just set it up difficult. It always ends up in the same place. Pros don't, we prefer going to a tough golf course made easier than an easy golf course tricked up. I will say that, but the ideal design is a golf course that amateurs can play and enjoy and love. And pros then, when they do come along every once in a while, it can be set up very testing. And it can be done. There should never be a hazard on the golf course that only catches an amateur and never catches a pro.
Okay.
Like, why would you put it there?
Yeah.
And it makes no reason to put something in on the golf course that never comes into play for a really good player and yet catches up an amateur. So, you know, why would you have a bunker, you know, 200 yards in front of the sight line of the amateur's tee? You know, there's just no point.
No.
The pro is never going near that. And the amount of amateurs who would struggle to flight at 200 yards in the air, you know, why would you do it? It's just, why beat them up? It's just silly. I know when it came to Adair Manor, they're redesigning. And one of the things I was always saying is, you'd never ever have to look for your golf ball on the golf course, ever, if at all possible. So if you hit it into trouble like a lake, you know your golf ball is gone. But if you hit it into the rough or the tree line, clean out the tree line, clean the rough, so people aren't looking. They move on quickly. You can change that very quickly when a tournament comes along. But in general, you know, keep everything nice and tidy and cut back so that, you know, people move along. They find a ball, they can pitch. And there's no greater treat than trying to pitch out of the trees. That's one of the great things at golf when you're in the trees. Can you hit it out of the trees? So, you know, you should clean out all that shrubbery and that, you know, have it nice and tidy. Again, the big difference, if I was designing a golf course, I would have a set of quick tees.
Tees.
I haven't seen. Yeah, so you design a golf course and you put them in and you put in your golf course. And it's a certain length, it's a certain standard scratch, it's all that sort of thing. But if you think back to how golf was played 100 years ago, they teed off the back of the green to the next hole. That's how they played.
Right.
So there should be a set of tees that's always going forward. So when you finish the hole, you walk to a tee box that's going towards the next green and you play. Yeah. And if the hole happens to be 300 yards or 600 yards, you just play the hole as is from the quickest point you can play going forward. So you're always walking forward and never walking back. So the thing that slows down golf immensely is new back tees, because they're always backwards, and that means you're walking further and further away. There's lots of things like that.
That's a life lesson as well. Don't look back, always look forward. Now, listen, you had a hand in the golf course design at the Renaissance Club for the Scottish Open. You must be proud of that.
I didn't have a hand with the design. Tom Doak did the design, and I love Tom Doak, Gil Hans. The new guys are doing a great job with the design. It's amazing how golf has kind of come full circle. You had the old great golf courses, which were very much walk forward, very natural, play the way the mounds help. Everything helps you keep, helps the flow of the course. Then they started building golf courses that were more, I suppose, stadium-like, which are tournament courses. There's no doubt that if you went to at the Sawgrass Peak Dye, it's a fantastic tournament golf course. Like, real, for professional golfers, it's the ideal test. Every shot, a professional golf shot is generally absolute danger on one side and temptation to bail out the other side and not do it. That is really what a tournament shot is. But, you know, majority of amateurs, and I really mean this, if they were trying to play their best and not trying to play safe, I don't know if there would be enough golf balls they could carry in their bag to get around the golf course like Sawgrass.
No.
There's just so much difficulty and trouble in tournament conditions.
Yeah, really,
in tournament
really
conditions.
I'd love to try, though. So if you can get me on that course, I'd be very grateful.
I can. Do you know what, Di? I have a few free green fees, too, as a member of the PGA Tour. I'm a member of Sawgrass, so I can sort you out for a free round of golf in Sawgrass.
Oh, that's marvellous. And everyone in the office right now is got their thumbs up saying, can you get me in as well? So there's about 20 here.
I let you choose the four ball, okay?
Oh, amazing. I'm recording this. I'm going to play it back to you.
Yeah, but the problem is that you're going to lose a lot of friends over that. You've only got three
other
spots.
It's fine. I don't need many mates if I'm playing Sawgrass. It's okay. I'm quite happy to lose friends. Yes. But when we think of golf course design, we've got to think about sustainability. And did you know, Padraig, that 46% of golf fans believe that contributing to the community is important. So when we think about golf course sustainability, what are the big factors that we should consider?
I think water usage is the number one thing at this stage. Majority of golf courses will use recycled water, will have a system, will drill their own wells, so they're not taken from the system. Obviously, there's a lot of money put into golf, so they have done the research on chemicals and things that they use in the golf course. Again, they're, you know, as environmentally safe as they can.
They've changed so much over the years, haven't they, the chemicals that are used?
Unbelievable, yeah, what you can. And this is for people's health on the golf course, handling it and all that sort of, you know, safety, health and safety. But, you know, another thing that's often missed about golf courses, which, we, you know, golfers have a little chip on our shoulder, there's some great golf courses. And I know there's a slightly different argument to this, like we can go to Fan Ling in Hong Kong, and majority of people want the golf course given up for housing because there's a shortage of space for housing in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
But, you know, other places, we've seen this other places there. There's a great golf course in Nokia in Belgium, and it's a fabulous course. And there's a thing for the golf course to be closed down because it's in the middle of the village. And that, but that golf course would have been houses only for the golf course that sustained it there for 100 years. You know, if it wasn't a golf course, it would have been developed out. So, you know, looking at it today, you might say, oh, well, why is that so much land being used up for a golf course? Well, it would have been used for something else and not a great use. Yes, it's only got a small amount of the population who have access to it, which I do agree is an issue when you're in a city that, you know, there might be only 2,000 members with access to a golf course that's in the city boundary, which, you know, could have a million people. That is unfair. But the golf course, the piece of land wouldn't be for people's use anyway if it wasn't for a golf course. You know, is it the right use of land in a city? But as I said, it wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
You know, there'd be something else. There'd be a factory built on it. There'd be something else. There'd be in that position. So that is complicated. I'm not denying that.
Governing bodies, they've got big issues, haven't they, to to find solutions to those problems.
They're thinking about it, though. They are really, they, you know, it's a big part, you know, financially, the RNA and the USGA, they run two of the biggest tournaments, so they bring money in. And from that, you know, they do try, they're very keen on the sustainability of the game. They're very keen on the environmental impact of the game. And, you know, they have the firepower to look into it, and they're dealing with it. And they're dealing with a very good, honest heart. You know, they're not looking at this. They do want to actually make golf the greatest game in the world. And to be the greatest game in the world, it has to be sustainable. It has to be good for the environment. But it is a very complicated issue. There's no doubt about it, as I said. I will say, as a slight aside, if your golf course, and we see, I've seen this in the US in particular.
Right.
If it runs a tournament every year, so we go back to the same venue every year, I cannot tell you how much the environment around the golf course improves. Like, just everything. A golf course brings so much revenue into the area that the area around the golf course just exponentially improved over the years. Opportunities, all the housing, the businesses all get better and better over the years. Safer and safer in many cases. You know, it's not a bad thing to have a golf course generate money for the local community, for sure.
Padraig, this has been absolutely fantastic. And there is still so much more I want to chat to you about, like diversity and inclusion and your role as an ambassador for the Special Olympics. So we'll come back to that next time. Watch out for that episode in your feeds very soon to hear more from Padraig. And thanks so much for listening to this first episode of This Is Why Golf Opinion Matters. If you like what you've heard, make sure you subscribe on your favourite podcast provider and also leave us a review too. The This Is Why Golf platform has so much to offer online, and you can find it all by heading to thisiswhygolf.com. See you next time.